Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
Good evening on this beautiful Saturday, day before Easter. I hope everybody has plans to be with their loved ones and have a nice stress-free day. Enjoy some weather. It's been warming up. Of course, we're into the spring season already, and everything's starting to bloom. You're starting to see some of the buds on the trees starting to open up. Got the tulips, the cherry blossoms, and more importantly, we have baseball right around the corner, Steve. It's amazing that just seems to creep up every year on us, and it's basically around the same time every year, but it seems to just, you know, the off season is getting quicker and quicker, it seems. Steve? Let's see what happened real quick. I might have a little technical issue. Steve, can you hear
me? Hello? I can hear you.
Steve,
are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
I don't know what happened there.
Didn't know what happened, but to your point, yeah, spring training is coming to a close. Guys are ready to get, to their parent club or their parent city, and get the season started. They're tuned up. The off seasons are always short for these guys. They come in prepared. They come in ready, and they're just fine tuning everything right now around the Cactus League and Grapefruit League, and baseball season is right around the corner and ready to start, and I think we're both excited about that.
So for some guys, it's going to be an opportunity to prove themselves. Other guys are going to be an opportunity to continue the success they've had, work for a contract, like some of the guys we'll be speaking about tonight, including Ian Desmond, who turned down a very lucrative contract earlier in 2015 from the Washington Nationals and ended up, of course, hindsight, we're all geniuses, ended up being a one-year, $8 million deal to play an outfield position, something that he hasn't played for the Texas Rangers. So he switched leagues, one-year deal to try to make up for it. And other guys, trying to just work for a spot and trying to get back to the major leagues and trying to solidify their spot, such as non-roster invitee Jabba Chamberlain. Who would have thought we would have said that? If anyone would have told you that several years ago when he was with the Yankees and they were talking about him being the biggest thing, for a long time, who would have thought you were crazy? But the Indians are adding it as a non-roster invitee. So you have guys like this, Steve. So take us into the mindset of guys trying to avoid those, finding the bat slip in their lockers.
Yeah, well, what it comes down to is each individual, whoever it may be, Jabba, and other players out there, when they don't have the best year coming off of the last season, they always look for a spot that is going to fit best for them as a non-roster invitee, where they can have a resurgence, where they can, reestablish themselves and reestablish their career, and where the best fit is them to make a team. And that's what guys do as non-roster invitees, and they come into camp, and sometimes it spurs something inside them to have that competition. When guys have deals already, their spring training's a little lighter. When they come in on a non-roster invitee with an opportunity to make a team, they got to be ready from day one, and that's how they approach it. And it worked out well for Jabba Chamberlain. He's got the opportunity now to reestablish himself in a very good Cleveland Indian bullpen, and he's going to be a big part of what this team's able to accomplish this year.
So the last time Jabba Chamberlain was great, and it's been quite a long time now, and they've tried him out with, at least with the Yankees, as a relief pitcher, as a closer in limited time, and also as the as a starter, and that's where things kind of fell apart for him. So an age 22 season is a long way away, Steve, or a long time ago. 2008, we're taking it back, and he was 4-3, 2.60 ERA, 42 games. Started 12 of those games, had 118 strikeouts, a 10.6 strikeout per nine inning ratio. The year before, when he really shined, only pitched 19 games, but kind of that K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez type burst onto the scene. He was 2-0, 0.38 ERA, 34 strikeouts in 24 innings, 12.8 strikeouts per nine innings. So then he kind of just his numbers vacillated from there. Some consistency, some inconsistency, mostly inconsistency. Then last year, bounced from Detroit to Kansas City very briefly in Kansas City. Only pitched for six games for them, 5.2 innings, but did have eight strikeouts during that time. Did also have an inflated ERA near eight, but a very small data set. So, and his whip was closer to lifetime whip, 1.388. Can't do that as a relief pitcher or a starter. That gets you into a lot of trouble. But hopefully he's able to rebuild himself. He's going to be entering his age 30 season, so he's still got time to do that. But he's one of those guys we'll be talking about, and we've been talking about, that are trying to get themselves back on the right foot. But let's shift gears from baseball just a little bit here. We will be talking about the AL West. It's our last team, our last division in our annual team-by-team, division-by-division analysis. I'm very psyched to talk about one team in particular. It's the same team I was geeked up about last year, and it kind of worked out well, my excitement, because it showed that I wasn't that crazy, although that team did surprise a lot of people. Let's talk about the NCAA and the amazing tournament that we had so far, Steve. I'm talking about breathtaking endings. I mean, speechless endings. It's just amazing what we've been able to see. I forgot the game the other day. The guy hit the game tying three pointer and then hit in the corner game winning three pointer. It was, I forgot the game it was, but it was just whatever I've seen so far. Yeah, that was a Wisconsin game. Unbelievable finishes this year. I mean, every year we say that, but this year just seems on another level. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, and that's what this tournament is all about. This tournament is about teams who are bubble teams who they talk about not getting in, and one of those teams was Syracuse, and now they're in the Sweet 16 facing Virginia. You know, you have these mid-major teams that not very many people know about. They don't get all the hype and all the TV time, you know, like the SEC, the ACC, the Pac-10, and all those and all those conferences. But, you know, these mid-majors can play basketball. They've proven that. You've seen Hawaii take out Cal. Gonzaga had made a nice run. And there were a lot of high seeds. I mean, number six seed Wisconsin, number seven seed, I believe it was Notre Dame, have met, and Notre Dame ended up winning. So, you know, it's just been an amazing tournament so far. It's you know, it's three and a half weeks of just all out fun, and it's enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to say the least, it's definitely a lot of chaos and mayhem for those of you working in the brackets. And my buddy was doing the ESPN bracket, and he was in the 92 percentile, and so we were doing the math to try to figure out. He was 1,338,000, something like that place. I'm like, wow. That's just ESPN in this one particular tournament. It's amazing how large this is and how many eyeballs are on these players. We see Oklahoma doing something big today, knocking off first seed Oregon in the West, 80-68 score. We have Kansas and Villanova playing right now. We'll be giving updates as we go along, which is awesome. I know we do this when we have baseball games Saturday, Sunday nights when we do the shows that time. We do everything live. All the news is live. Right now, Villanova is beating Kansas by 7-20 score there in the first half, but Oklahoma winning today. Buddy Hield, Oklahoma senior, going off 13 for 20 from the field, 37 points in a high stakes game. He's not doing anything to hurt himself this season, Steve. It's amazing what he's been able to do and grow up and rise to the occasion this year for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting them on their back and they're riding him. I mean, it's an amazing run. It's almost a Danny Manning type of player, where Danny Manning put him on their back and Kansas won the national championship years ago. So, you know, one player in this tournament can make a difference, you know, no matter what team it is. And he's just been doing a phenomenal job, and it's just fun to watch him play basketball.
Absolutely. Most three-pointers by an Oklahoma player in NCAA tournament game. He was just shooting the lights out, as they say, putting on the clinic. Again, I'm going to use some terminology here. Eight three-pointers, the most points in Elite Eight game since 1990. First 25 point point per game score to reach the Final Four. That was a SportsCenter tweet earlier. They had an image with the some info on there, so I'm reading off of that. Just an incredible performance there, and amazing what these kids can do. Some of them are, I mean, it's hard to even say that they're kids anymore. They play like men. It's just it's amazing the charisma and the characteristics that they have with all the pressure that they have at such an early age.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these guys get thrust into the limelight, especially at the big conferences. Again, they're always on TV every weekend. There's tons of eyes on them. And it's an opportunity to shine when it is, you know. I mean, these guys now are reaching the Final Four. As you said, your buddy was in a bracket pool, and he was a million plus or whatever he was, whatever place he was in. And that just shows you the enormity of what this tournament is and what people think about this tournament. And it seems just to never let you down. There's always crazy games. There's always upsets. There's always last-minute shots. And like I said, it's just really a lot of fun to watch and watch these kids grow up. And then ultimately, you know, some of these guys go to the NBA and become big stars as well.
Just a couple more stats on this before we move off to NCAA, and I'll provide one more quick update on the Villanova-Kansas game. Of course, a lot of eyeballs on that. Buddy Hield, 117 points to his first four tournament games. Who has more than that by 4 points? How about Steph Curry? Good company to be in, obviously. And how about this company? The players averaged 25 points per game since 19 for a Final Four team since 1975. We got Buddy Hield, of course, this year. Dennis Scott for Georgia Tech, 89-90. Glenn Rice, one of the best shooters I've ever seen. Unbelievable talent. 1988-89. And then, of course, Larry Legend, Larry Bird, Indiana State, 1978-1979. So, I'm sorry, 1978-79. So those are the four players that have done it. It hasn't been done in about a quarter century, or actually a little more than a quarter century. So amazing, amazing stuff from Buddy Hield and what we're seeing out of the tournament this year. And now with 13 seconds left in the first half, Villanova leads 29-25. We'll continue providing updates there, which is really cool. So it's like you're not missing the game. Plus, you get to listen to me, which is also also a blessing. So Steve, to shift back over, we've got some news, some bad news for Milwaukee Brewers fans. Of course, we don't expect them to do much this year, but you don't want to see it happen because of injury. Will Smith, who looked primed to take over the closer position, he was in a little bit of a battle with Jeffress, but it was more Will Smith's territory to lose, more his job to lose. And now he's going to be gone for an unforeseen amount of time with a torn lateral collateral ligament. You hate to see this for anybody. The beginning of the season, the chance to really show his stuff, what he's been working so hard for. You know, lefty Will Smith for the Milwaukee Brewers now hurt. And again, we're not exactly sure how long he'll be out for. So that's a big blow for fantasy players too. It's a big blow, but you know, as a fan itself, you hate to see something like this happen.
Yeah, it's definitely a big blow for the Milwaukee Brewers, and it was a freak thing on how he hurt his knee. He was actually, you know, trying to take off his shoe, and he hopped on the leg to try to take off his shoe. And he ended up hurting his ligament. So it is a big blow. You know, it's a team that's rebuilding. They're trying to get pieces into place and get guys experience. But you know, it's somebody's gonna have to step up and step in, and they'll find themselves a back end reliever or a closer when the season starts.
Smith saying of the freak injury, it's disappointing. It sucks. As a competitor, you want to play. Sitting out is never fun, but it'll be all right. Everybody tells you there's nothing you can do about it, but you still feel like you're letting people down. And that is how it is. Whether you're playing professionally or whether you're playing in the schoolyard, you jam your finger, you roll on your knee, on your ankle, whatever it is, you hate to ever leave the court, leave the field, whatever it might be. You feel like you're letting people down, even if it's something that's freakish like this. Will Smith coming off the best of his best season of his 4-year career. 2.70 ERA last year with a 34.5% strikeout rate, 76 appearances last year. So a very solid season. And finally, you know, with Francisco Rodriguez being shipped out, and the great season K-Rod had last year, him going to Detroit opened up the door, and now, you know, this, it's going to be a little bit more of a delay for Will Smith to show his stuff as a full-time closer. So Jeremy Jeffress is looking like he's going to be their closer. For those of you out there playing fantasy, I just completed my fourth and final draft. Been a little bit of a slog there Thursday, Friday, earlier this morning, and just now, about a half hour ago, I finished my last one, which is a 16-team league. We'll talk more about fantasy. Maybe next week we'll do a fantasy special or the week after. I know most people are done with drafting or about to do their drafts, but what I always say, Steve, is that it's not the draft that you should be worried about so much. It's more the regular season, because stuff like this happens and you have to be able to figure out who you can pick up and when and what's there. Then you also have guys like Jason Grilley, who is looking to be the closer for Atlanta again. He's in the final year of a 2-year deal. It was great last year up until he got hurt. They have Vizcaino there waiting in the wings, so you know they're going to be able to. They have to showcase Grilley to try to ship him off in a trade. Maybe that's what happens here. Who knows? But there's a lot that you need to do after the draft, so we'll probably do that special. What do you think, Steve? In a week or two?
Yeah, I think it's good. And then we can, you know, give the folks out there maybe a couple sleepers that they'll be able to pick up on the waiver wire and add to their ball club and maybe make a difference. So that would be a lot of fun if we added that in and gave the fans, you know, some fantasy advice.
Mm-hmm. We have an injury, another kind of a freak thing. Milwaukee Brewery outfielder Raimer Liriano getting struck in the face by a pitch in an exhibition game last Sunday. He has multiple facial and nasal fractures, so he'll be going in for surgery. It's that's going to be on Tuesday, facial surgery for him. Very scary, Steve. Of course, we saw what happened with Giancarlo Stanton a couple seasons ago. No matter who it happens to, whether it's from the pitcher delivering it and hitting the batter, or the other way with the batter swinging it, you know, hitting the ball back at the pitcher, it's scary every single time. It's always in your mind every single time. So obviously we hope for a speedy recovery for Liriano, Raimer Liriano, and obviously hopefully there's nothing lasting about what happened here.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous situation when, you know, a ball gets away from a pitcher and a batter can't get out of the way and he's not able to turn his head or his face and gets hit there. I mean, it's part of the game, but you never like to see that happen. Unfortunately, you know, we'll see what happens when he comes back. A lot of guys have a mental block, you know, when they step back in the batter's box about getting hit again. So we'll see how much that affects him, but we definitely hope for a speedy recovery after surgery and see him back on the field.
Mm-hmm. And we have Rougned Odor having a monster game heading into Friday's exhibition game, yesterday's exhibition game. The coach, we'll be talking about the Rangers a little more shortly, but he's worried about the fact that he hasn't had a lot of time because of an oblique issue. It's always something that people don't understand, the oblique. But if you're a batter, if you're a pitcher, it doesn't matter whether you're working in a mailroom somewhere. It's a very painful injury. It takes time to heal. But especially if you're a baseball player, taking swings the way you got to take swings and the way that Rougned Odor plays, you know, it's something that you have to always be careful with. Jeff Banser was a little cautious with him. Wasn't really sure what he's going to get out of him. So what does Odor do? Goes out, goes 4-for-4, and smashes 3 home runs. So that's pretty freaking impressive, Steve, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, I mean, coming off an injury like that, you go out there and the aggressiveness and the type of swings you got to take. You know, if you happen to swing and miss, sometimes you can re-injure that oblique. So, you know, I think that he's done everything he can and give his skipper some confidence in being able to get him out there and play him every day because he's a important part of that ball club.
Mm-hmm. Now, that also helped him extend the hitting streak to 6 games up to that point. So Rougned Odor looks fine. For those looking to draft him, he's going pretty high in the drafts that I've been doing in keeper league. So even in keeper leagues, he's going up there pretty high. There's a lot of really good second basemen out there. You got Joe Panik. You have Ian Kinsler, of course, Rougned Odor, and there's a whole slew of others, DJ LeMahieu. And again, there's a whole bunch of them out there. But there's certain players that just reach that next level and haven't even scratched the surface, I believe, of their potential. I love Joe Panik. I love what he's going to do. I love what the Giants are going to do this year. And Rougned Odor is one of those guys. I expect a lot out of him. Staying on the Rangers, you have Josh Hamilton saying that he's his knee is feeling the best it's been in about 5 years. A lot of expectation for that team. Josh Hamilton trying to one of those guys are trying to rebuild his name, his reputation, his on the field reputation, especially after what happened last year with Anaheim pretty much being just thrown out, and they're still eating most of his salary. So that just shows you what how that relationship broke down. Josh Hamilton's trying to show him that he's not that guy. He's not the guy folks that. That you can't rely on, that, that's spotty at best. He wants to be that guy that he was several years ago, where he was MVP and MVP candidate for so many years in a row. So that's the latest news on Josh Hamilton. Let's move on to doing our team-by-team analysis of the AL West. A lot of moving, a lot of shaking this year. Not as much as there was the previous year for the first team we're going to be speaking about. The Oakland A's, Billy Beane, had a fire sale at the end of 2014, Steve. 2015, not so much. Did make some moves there, but nothing overly crazy, I got to say. But it did bring in some guys. Rich Hill, who continues to find work, had a really good run last year in limited time, really good low ERA, so he really performed well for him. They brought in Liam Hendricks in the trade, Jed Lowry back in Oakland on the trade. It's kind of revolving door for him, it seems. Yonder Alonso in the trade, Mark Szczepanski in the trade. Ryan Matson, we spoke about that big deal that he got after missing so many years and coming back and being just dominant, lights out, old Ryan Matson himself with the Kansas City Royals last year. Brought in John Axford and Henderson Alvarez as free agents as well. So they did end up trading away Brett Laurie, Drew Pomeranz, and Jesse Chavez, and Evan Scribner as well. So there's a lot there. They helped out their bullpen. They traded Tyler Clifford last year, midseason, after trading for him. So this is a team that, he's trying to solidify. Billy Beane's trying to do some things there. You don't really know how long this particular rebuilding is going to be, but I like some of the guys they have on their team, but I'm not expecting much here, Steve, for the Oakland Athletics for the next year or two.
Yeah, their roster's not really deep. They got a lot of guys that are middle of the road players. I think that, I think their starting pitching is going to struggle. I mean, you got Sonny Gray at the top of that rotation, who's going to be your most consistent guy. But all the guys after him, Hahn, Graveman, Hill, Bassett, and whoever else is in the mix for that rotation is, I think going to be very inconsistent and struggle at times. And I'm not sure how many runs these guys are going to score. Their defense has not been, very good in spring training. So even with the moves that Billy Beane has made, he's trying to plug holes and do some different things. And we'll see where that goes as the first quarter of the season transpires. I mean, you can tell a lot between the game one and game 40. The first 40 games are really, a path to what type of team you're going to be as the season continues to move forward. Health will again obviously be a main factor to these guys. They got to stay healthy and stay very consistent for them to be competitive, in my opinion, this year. So Bob Melvin has his work cut out for him, and we'll kind of see what transpires as the beginning of the season starts for the Oakland Athletics.
Mm-hmm. That being said, they have some guys that, again, I really like. I like Marcus Semien. I like what he can do. They got him in that trade last year. I don't know why that video keeps popping up. Marcus Semien, they got him in that trade. He could play multiple positions. Going to be focusing on second base. You have Jed Lowry, who's going to be playing off second and shortstop as well, filling in there. Danny Valencia had a really good, very impressive season in 105 games last year. 18 dingers. Guy's kind of been a journeyman over the last several years, but kind of finding a home here. 18 homers, 66 RBIs, and 59 runs again in 105 games last year. You have Chris Davis, who I failed to mention. They got him in a trade with the Milwaukee Brewers. 27 homers last year, although a little bit slow to start that, but that was in 121 games, Steve. 247 average, so they got to work on that. Big ballpark for him to play in. He's got some big power there. Chris Davis Modesto, I think, is a nice addition to that team. I do have him in a couple of my leagues. You have Josh Reddick out there who's anchoring, kind of become a little bit of a captain, or not a captain, but a leader of the team in a lot of different ways. 272 last year, bouncing back big time, 20 homers, 77 RBI, 67 runs, limited his strikeouts. I believe he had something in the 60 range of strikeouts, which is really good for a guy who's putting up 20 homers in that ballpark and not a lot of protection for him. But he did have a really good season for them, 49 walks as well. So I like Josh Reddick there. I don't know if I would draft in a fantasy if you wanted my opinion there. But I also love Billy Burns, Steve. Did really well last year in 125 games for him. 26 steals. He's been working with Ricky Henderson, somebody you know pretty well, considering you were traded for him many moons ago. But he's been working with him to try to get more stolen bases, higher than the 26 range. 70 runs last year in limited time on a very poor offensive team. 42 RBIs, 5 dingers, and there are some injuries there and some guys coming back. Stephen Vogt with that arm, he said that his surgically repaired elbow is feeling okay. He's been hitting pretty well in spring training, but obviously the team is anxious for that. They don't want anything to happen to him. Sonny Gray, probable for the start of the season now with an arm. And you have Sean Doolittle's coming back, and he's also questionable for the start of the season with triceps. So this is a team that has some names here. Who knows what they're going to end up doing the rest of the way. But, you know, they also have some other guys like Coco Chris coming back who missed most of last year, only played 44 games and only batted 175 in very limited time. That's not the Coco Chris we remember when they had that big run a couple years back. So this is a team that's very interesting, but I think they're going to play more of a spoiler, more of that nuisance team than anything else, Steve.
Yeah, I just don't know where they're going to get their offense from. I mean, they're going to have to manufacture runs. I don't see them, hitting a lot of home runs. I know Chris Davis is there and Josh Reddick, but if there's nobody to protect these guys in the middle of the lineup, they're going to get tough pitches to hit. They're going to get pitched around at times, and they're going to need somebody, you know, like a Semien or a Lowry or even a Valencia to step up and have a monster year. But I agree with you. I just think that this team is very average on paper, and I don't know how much of a spoiler they're going to play, but, I just think in a tough, tough AL West, I just don't see them, mustering up very much offense, and that's going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm. It is a very tough AL West for sure. Pretty much every division is toughened up this year. It's amazing how much talent there is now. Of course, the game is so much more international than it was many moons ago. And now you have the infusion of Cuban talent. And of course, there's probably going to be more of that now that the walls and the barriers are pretty much broken down with what this administration has done and bringing and normalizing somewhat relations with Cuba. So we'll see how that impacts the game. It definitely could only have a good impact on the game. You are able to bring more talent. You don't have to go through the process of being smuggled in. You don't have to go through a process of defecting and all this other kind of stuff. There's no scandal around it. You can just go and just do whatever you want to do. Hopefully that ends up being the case. But the next team that we go into is a team that I expected a lot from last year. They just did not perform well. They had guys like Taiwan Walker, who had a great spring and just faltered throughout the regular season. Felix Hernandez, who was kind of shaky in certain, even though he had a great season, he was shaky at certain parts during the year. Just the whole team was not themselves. Nelly Cruz is really the lone bright spot. Kyle Seager, after signing that big-time contract, had dropped off, had regressed. Robbie Cano, decent year, but not for the money that they're paying him, that monster 10-year, $250 million contract. Certainly not what they expected there, but let's look at what they were able to do this offseason. And again, this is just a Reader's Digest version, but bringing in Nate Karns in the trade with the Tampa Rays, I like that. I like what Nate Karns did last year. Joaquin Benoit bringing him in. Leonis Martin, bring him in. Chris Iannetta signing him. Nori Aoki signing him. Wade Miley in a trade with Boston. Should do okay there. Lefty in that ballpark. Should do all right. Probably ends up being a low 4 ERA guy instead of mid 4 ERA, which he was his past year. Adam Lind, I like. Very quietly had a really solid season. 80 RBIs. Very good for them. Steve Cishek trying to rebuild himself after that the struggles of all of last year, eventually seeding really the last couple of years actually Cishek has struggled, but eventually AJ Ramos came in and solidified the back end of the bullpen for the Marlins. And Hisashi Iwakuma, who actually signed with two different teams, one being the Mariners after the first trade, first deal fell through, and then re-signing ultimately with the Seattle Mariners. You saw Logan Morrison depart, Brad Miller also departing, which I'm surprised they let him go. Tom Williamson going to Texas, Mark Trumbo going over to Baltimore, getting traded yet again. Ronis Elias going over to Boston. I don't think I'm pronouncing that right. Carson Smith also going to Boston. So interesting offseason there. This is a team that has some talent there. Again, mentioned Nelly Cruz there. Mentioned Robbie Cano, Kyle Seager. They have some other guys there in that team that can hit. It's just a matter of can they put it all together with that starting rotation, which is a pretty formidable starting rotation led by King Felix. You have Iwakuma. You have Taijuan Walker if he can step into his own. You have Wade Miley. You have Paxton, who I like. Didn't really do too well last year in limited time, only 67 innings. Then you have Nate Karns as well. But again, Felix Hernandez is a showpiece there. 18 wins last year, 200 innings, 191 Ks, but mid-3 ERA, which is rare to see for a guy like him. So you hope that's not the start of something of a new trend for him. And is a regression. He's been pitching forever, it seems. And, you know, eventually that takes a toll on the arm. Then you have guys like Ketel Marte, Steve. So I think this team has some good pieces here. I don't see them as a playoff team, but I see them as being a little bit better than the Oakland A's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you hit it on the head. They had a lot of turnover, not only with players, but with staff and front office, and trying to bring a new culture to the ball club, especially with Scott Service as their manager. But mm-hmm. on paper, you know, the pieces are there. I really do like what they did with this ball club, guys that they brought in, how they're trying to piece together what kind of team they want to be in that ballpark up in Seattle. And, you know, like you said, the pieces are there. You know, I think they're be a lot more competitive than they were last year. You know, you got another year with Seager underneath his belt and an experience. Robbie Cano seems to, you know, be a little bit better this year, and they're looking for big things from him. You know, they have Nori Aoki who they brought in as well. So the biggest thing that concerns me, besides Benoit, is the bridge to their closer, C-Shack. You know, I think their middle relief between the sixth and eighth inning is kind of suspect, and you know, if they have the lead after six and they take their starter out, I think the key is for those guys being able to bridge the ball, bridge the game and get the ball to their closer. And, you know, we'll see how C-Shack bounces back and what kind of year he can have. But that ballpark will definitely help out him, you know, as well as some other guys in that pen, the way he plays.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, Robbie Cano did have struggles last year. People might see the home run number and say, oh, you know, well, that's pretty good for a second baseman. But you got to look at it in the context of the fact that he got that mega deal and the fact that he hit 287, more importantly, last year in 156 games. That's not the Cano that we know. That's not the former champ, batting champ, Robbie Cano that we know. But again, he's going to have more protection this year. Seager, you would expect in the second year of that mega deal, he's been good. He's been really solid for them. Only 266 last year, did play. So it's very serviceable, 161 games last year. But 266 hurts. You bump that up a little bit, even to 280, 285. You get that RBI total and run total up a lot higher, 85 runs last year, 74 runs batted in. And you have Adam Lind, again, anchoring that, 149 games last year, 72 runs, 20 dingers, 87 RBIs. So I like them adding this guy. I don't know if they end up holding on to him. You never know. It depends on where they are. But this is a guy that a lot of teams can use and a lot of power. But if they end up holding on to him, it's nice to have him and Nelson Cruz as your guys. 64 total home runs between them last year. You throw in the 21 from Robbie Cano, you have a pretty solid middle of the order if everyone performs. But I do expect fully that Robbie Cano hits over 300 this year, shakes off the demons of last year, and of course the pressure of that mega contract, 10-year, $250 million deal that he got.
Yeah, that mega deal is definitely behind them. I think the first year you put a lot of pressure on yourself to be the guy to carry the ball club, and they weren't a very good ball club last year. Let's just say it how it is. You know, they struggled in all facets of the game, and when your main player, who you give, you know, basically $30 million to or $25 million to, has a very average year, your ball club's going to have a very average year. And that's what happened. But, again, with the pieces that they brought in, the middle of the lineup being what I see as a strength of theirs, I think they're going to generate some more runs and be a lot more competitive in the AL West and maybe give it a run for a little bit. But can they sustain it for a full year? That starting pitching has to stay healthy and put up a lot of innings. So you're going to have to try to get 150 to 200 innings out of every starting pitcher, and that bullpen's going to be able to have to step up and get the ball to their closer and give them an opportunity to win some ball games.
Absolutely. So with that wraps up the Seattle Mariners. We move on to the Texas Rangers. Had some injury issues last year. Did see Prince Fielder have a big bounce back year after the terrible 2014 that he had, the scary 2014 that he had with the neck injury. Nobody knew what he'd come back like. He plays hard. He's a big boy. He runs, but you're always worried about somebody of that size. I'm not saying it in a negative light, but a guy of that size and how he plays, how hard he runs, how hard he does everything, you're always afraid of what that can do to his body over time. But over the course of his career, 2014 not included, he's been pretty much there almost every day, almost every game. He's produced almost every day and almost every game. So he's one of those guys that you just got to have in your rotate in your batting order. Great clubhouse guy, from what I understand. Leads that team. We saw what he was able to do with Ryan Braun. We saw what he was able to do with Miguel Cabrera. Now you got a lot of guys, a lot of talent around him. Not quite of those names as they were. Josh Hamilton, we don't know which Josh Hamilton we're going to get. Mitch Moreland had a great year last year, finally had that breakout. Then you have a lot of other guys. We mentioned Rougned Odor. You still have Elvis Andrus there. You don't know what you're going to get out of him either. But there's a lot of talent on this team, Steve, and that's just on the offensive side. Pitching-wise, there's a team that got Cole Hamels last year, held on to him because they knew what they were going to have this year when they came back healthy. You got Yu Darvish coming back, hopefully soon. Looks like May for him after the bad injury he had last year going in for Tommy John. This is a team with a lot of expectation. Of course, we saw what they did last year without Yu Darvish and with a team that you really wouldn't expect them to do what they did. This is a team with a lot of heart. Jeff Banister, Coach of the Year. This is a team you've got high expectations this year.
This team can be very, very, very good this year. I think they overachieved a little bit last year, but as you said, Cole Hamels leading that, Yu Darvish coming back, and then you have, all these guys that are going to fill in with Holland, Lewis, Perez, Martinez. Three of those four guys are going to fill out the rotation. I just think that, what they put together on this ball club and the pieces that they've were able to acquire and get, and then you have the middle of the lineup with Beltre, you've got, Desmond and Chu. Those guys stay healthy. This team can put up a lot of runs, and if this team gets hot, at some point, I see them doing a lot of damage in the AL West and really, having an opportunity to win that division.
And there's not a lot of weaknesses in this team, especially offensively. Let's stick to the pitching a little bit. Again, you have Cole Hamels being your lead guy. 200 innings last year, very quietly, 215 strikeouts. He's going to be their opening day starter, followed by Derek Holland, Colby Lewis, who had 204 innings last year, coming back being pretty strong there. They end up re-signing him. You have Martin Perez, who in limited time last year was here and there, nothing really special. 78 innings last year, 48 strikeouts. Not the Martin Perez that we'd seen. We were excited about going into 2015. At least I was. And then obviously with that injury, he wasn't himself. But I expect a much bigger and better year for him. They got some great stuff there, some great makeup. You have Nick Martinez, who had shown some signs last year early on. 125 innings last year, 77 strikeouts, 3.96 ERA, 7-7. You have Chichi Gonzalez, who was also good in a lot of different starts last year. He's been optioned to AAA Round Rock for now. He was in contention for the fifth spot. Not sure what's going to end up happening now. but maybe ends up coming in later on and being a spot starter or something like that. So right now, a guy who was 4-6 for them last year at 3.90 ERA, 67 innings pitched for him, has been optioned to Round Rock. And then you have, again, Yu Darvish, who is expected to come back mid-May. Might end up being better for them that he comes back a little later. This was a team that was not very exciting for the first couple months. You had Sin Soo Choo, who killed people in fantasy, including myself, ended up dropping him, and then he ended up turning it on. It was too late for me to get him back. You had Delino DeShields, despite the .261 batting average last year, Steve, and this is really cool. 121 games last year he played in, 83 runs in that time. Just imagine if he would have had that other 41 games with the way that team was playing, he could have easily been over 100 runs. 25 stolen bases, could have been 40 or more stolen bases. So Delino DeShields Jr., really solid player there for them. Just got to bump that average up a little bit, but a guy who can give you infield hits and do a lot of different things with his legs as well. You have Mitch Moreland, I mentioned, 23 home runs, 85 RBIs last year. They have Ike Davis as well, who's questionable for the start of the season with a knee. I do like them adding him, give him a little bit of depth. It's, of course, with Prince Fielder becoming more of the full-time DH. 305 last year for Prince, 23 homers, 98 RBIs in that bounce-back year, but a leader on and off the field. Elvis Andrews, just not the guy that he was several years ago, is being compared to Derek Jeter and some others, but he's going to be there for him. 160 games last year, Steve, always healthy for him to stay on the field. You have Adrian Beltre still doing it after so many years, one of the best third basemen we've seen in the last 15, 20 years. 18 dingers last year, 83 runs, 83 RBIs, .287, and still hates when people touch his head. But a really solid solid year for them. And then you have Joey Gallo, who they're going to try to bring up and probably play out there at third base, probably play in the outfield. They have Drew Stubbs, Justin Ruggiano as well for some depth. I love the Ian Desmond signing, as you know. I don't like Ian Desmond per se, but I like him in that ballpark a lot. I think he has a lot to prove this year. I think he learned a lot of things from last year. Did turn it up a bit in the second half, but it was a little too late. Did have 19 homers still in what was a really bad season for him, 69 runs, 62 RBIs. Going to be playing outfield, and it's been rumored that he might end up playing some center field as well. So we'll see if that ends up happening. But Ian Desmond with a lot to prove in that ballpark, can do it, and might end up getting a big contract because of that one-year deal that he took.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Delino DeShields is going to be the catalyst. And then, Ian Desmond has a lot of swing and miss. He's going to see a lot more breaking balls this year in the American League than he has seen in the National League. He has some holes in his swing. I think he'll get exposed a little bit. So we'll see what kind of adjustments he's going to make moving from the National League to the American League. But as you said, the middle of their order is primed to have a big year, especially with Adrian Beltre. He needs to stay healthy. And if he can stay healthy and get to 150 games, this team is a very dangerous team and just has an opportunity to be as good or better as they were last year.
Mm-hmm. And this division has a three-way lock. It seems no real clear-cut favorites, although I have a team that I believe will be the best at the end of the season, but we'll talk about them next. But just one more note on Ian Desmond. I think a lot of his poor performance last year was obviously with the expectations of being a free agent and a big contract that he rejected. So, you're playing for something more in the huge contract you already declined, $100 million-plus. But I like that they move him to the outfield, Steve, not because Elvis Andrews is there and he would never beat him out there, but he was absolutely horrible at shortstop last year. I think he had something like 20-plus errors last year, which is you can't have that in the major leagues. And if he wasn't a guy who had that kind of bat and that kind of expectation, he would not even be in the starting lineup for most teams. But, of course, he's a guy who has 19-homer potential in the down year, so he could do some things there. But I think moving him to the outfield allows him to clear his head a little bit. He will have some errors out there, I'm sure, just because he's not a good fielder by nature, it seems. But he has some speed. He has to be able to catch the ball and be able to get get a good read on the ball at start. That's it's not like being at shortstop where so many balls are hit at you and you got to do so many putouts. I'm not saying outfield is not tough to play, but it's certainly not an infield position, especially shortstop, where a lot of times you have to anchor that infield. So Ian Desmond, I think, does well from there. Just a quick note on their bullpen, Sean Tullison, who I love. It's grown on me ever since I started doing my draft. 76 Ks last year and 72 in the third innings. Solidified the back end of their bullpen with 35 saves, 2.99 ERA. I expect that to be a little bit lower this year. You have Keone Kella, 2.39 ERA in 60 innings last year, 68 saves. You have Tom Wilson, who they brought in from the Mariners in that trade, 62 innings last year, 3.19 ERA, 60 Ks. Also has the ability to close out games. Did have 13 saves last year. And you have some other guys like Jake Diekman and Sam Dyson, who had a really good season last year, quietly 75 innings, 2.63 ERA, 2 saves. 71 Ks as well. So this is a team with a bullpen who will make you swing and miss, and the starting rotation who, especially with Yu Darvish in there, will make you swing and miss as well. So Texas Rangers, definitely a very dangerous team on paper and will be dangerous on the field as well, which leads to their crosstown rivals or cross-state rivals, the Houston Astros. Steve, remember how giddy I was last year for them? I guess it was warranted. They were absolutely amazing last year, and a team that I thought wasn't ready that particular year, but then they're making some trades, getting guys like Mike Fiers, who ended up pitching a no-hitter for them, Carlos Gomez, who was okay for them. He did give him a shot in the arm, did shoot some adrenaline in those arms and throughout those bodies, especially when they were playing the Yankees, which they needed. Dallas Keuchel, amazing last year. You had Colin McHugh. I didn't realize it, Steve, until I was doing my drafts. He had 19 wins last year. Nobody really spoke about him. I know we did on the show, but it eluded me how good he was last year. You had that. You had the fact they got Ken Giles back into their bullpen this year. You have George Springer come in to have a full, healthy season. This is a team that's very, very dangerous.
There's no question about it. You know, they overachieved last year, and they had an extremely good season, and that just gives this team confidence. It gives the players on that team confidence. They've gained another year of experience. You know, they went through a tough time in the playoffs to the Kansas City Royals. I think they'll learn from that. And, you know, A.J. Hinch is, you know, I rave about him all the time. I think he's the right man for that team, especially being as young as that team is. They got a catalyst in Jose Altuve leading off. You know, they got another young shortstop in Carlos Correa, who had a tremendous first year getting called up, and now he's more comfortable. He's got more experience at shortstop, and he's a guy that can really be a leader on that team and a guy that they can follow. So, you know, again, this team not only on paper is strong, but I see big things from their rotation. I see big things from their bullpen. They get a lead. I think they're going to be able to close some games out. And they're my favorite as far as who I think is going to win the division this year. I think I think it's going to be a race between the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, and the healthier team throughout the season is going to win that division and get to the playoffs, in my opinion.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. How about this stat, Steve? Between Colby Rasmus, who they had signed for a one-year deal for last year, and then they signed him again for 2016, between him and Luis Valbuena, two names that don't get a lot of airtime, but between the two of them, 50 home runs last year, and that's incredible for me. 25 home runs for Valbuena, 25 home runs for Colby Rasmus. The average is not that great, but this is a team, of course, the ballpark helps as well, but there's a lot of power there. There, no more Chris Carter there, who I believe had 23 home runs for them, but a 199 batting average, you get rid of that. All those strikeouts, you bring it, you have Carlos Gomez for a full year, had a down year last year, limited time, 115 games, still had 61 runs, 56 RBIs, 17 stolen bases. Again, only .255 batting average, but having a full season there, healthy, is big for them. And, you know, you have all these other guys. They have Preston Tucker, who had 13 home runs for them in 98 games. He's a guy, again, another 20 home run potential guy. You have George Springer, only 102 games last year, down season, so to speak, in his follow-up year, 16 home runs, 16 stolen bases. This is a guy who get on base a little bit more, did have a .276 batting average, could be at minimum 30 homer guy, and could be a 30-30 guy, a perennial 30-30 guy. mentioned Carlos Correa, 279 last year, 22 dingers in 99 games. Scary what he's going to be able to do. 14 stolen bases, rookie of the year, beating out guys like Francisco Lindor and Billy Burns in what was a great rookie class, both NL and AL. You have Marwin Gonzalez, who was also really good last year, 120 games, 12 home runs. So obviously there's a big theme here on the offensive side. And it's not really including guys like John Singleton, who they had a lot of expectation for. Don't know what's going to happen there with him, if he's going to play this year. You have Evan Gattis, who had 27 home runs for him last year, 88 RBIs, had a very slow start, .246 batting average. I expect that to be a little better this year. Struggling a little bit with a sports hernia, so start a year, he will be on the DL, it looks like, and he'll be out till at least April 10th. That's as of right now. I don't think anything changes at this point, but great stat here, Steve. Out of the 30 major league teams last year, guess who spent the least per win in that statistic? And that would be the Houston Astros. 86 wins, spent $803,072 per win in the $69 million payroll. The top payroll and the most, the highest cost per win, the LA Dodgers had 92 wins. And weren't that exciting in the playoffs. Had spent $2.5 million on the $230 million plus payroll. That's obviously going to come down a little bit as guys like Greinke and some other guys leave. But imagine spending $2.5 million per win and you don't even get into the World Series. Houston Astros spent a third of that and had a much more exciting season. And you expect that to continue for the Houston Astros. Just an amazing team and what A.J. Hinch is able to do with that team last year, getting guys primed and ready. And, of course, front office didn't hurt them by adding those other key players.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure what their payroll is going to be this year. It seems like it's going to rise a little bit, and it will continue to rise as they continue to win and players reach arbitration and free agency, and they have to keep them or if they can replace them with prospects when they leave. But as you said, you know, well said, this team is primed to win right now. They'll probably add some pieces at the trading deadline when that comes, and you know, they got the pieces right now to do a lot of damage, and I see them as, you know, one of the teams competing in the AL West, you know, for the division.
Mm-hmm. So last year they were sixth in runs scored, 729 runs. They were sixth in ERA, 3.57, sixth in runs allowed at 6.18, which is a run differential of 111, which is third. Batting average was light. They were 19th in batting average. So a little bit of a struggle there for them. But, you know, this is a team that can do a lot of different things. And, again, I believe they're a very dangerous squad. So and so do you, obviously, Steve. 86 and 76 last year, great season for them. And it should be a great follow-up starting rotation. You have Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh at the top. Lance McCullers is a little banged up right now. He's going to miss the start of the season. He's going to be out till at least mid-April with the shoulder. You have Mike Fiers, who I mentioned before, 180 innings last year. You add that. Colin McHugh had 203. You have Dallas Keuchel with 232. You had Lance McCullers with 125 in limited time last year. You have guys that can eat up innings. Then, by the way, they added Doug Fister, injury-plagued season last year, but they'd have 103 innings pitched, 419 ERA, which is above his norm, what we've seen for him, but only 24 walks during that time, so did have some decent control, 63 Ks, fighting for you know, permanent roster position there with Scott Feldman. Scott Feldman, 108 innings last year, 390 ERA, had some really good starts for them as well. Only 27 walks during that time. So this is a team that's going to eat up a lot of innings. Then you get to that bullpen, Steve. They have still Pat Neshek there, who was a mid-3 ERA guy last year, All-Star a couple of years ago. You have Tony Sipp, who I know you love, 199 ERA. They brought him back. You have Luke Gregerson, 310 ERA last year, pitched 61 innings. And then, again, closing out the game, Ken Giles, who's going to be a full-time closer this year, 70 innings last year, 180 ERA, 87 strikeouts, 15 saves last year. I love this ball club. Let's just leave it there.
Perfect.
Giles,
I will say that Giles will have a little bit more pressure on him closing games than he did in Philadelphia. So mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how he handles that. You know, again, in the American League, where, yes, he has you know, an overpowering fastball, but guys in the American League can hit fastballs pretty well, and I'll be very interested to see, you know, if he does blow a save or two, how he bounces back, and if he's able to keep his composure and, you know, keep the mental side of the game, you know, intact. So, you know, again, solid ball club, very competitive, look for big things from him. And it'll come down to their eighth and ninth inning guys, back into the bullpen guys, nailing down and closing down games when they have the lead.
And don't be pessimistic on them, Steve. I'm drafting Ken Giles everywhere. I love that they added him. This is a team that, that struggled in the back of their bullpen last year. I do agree with you, actually, that there will be a lot more pressure on them as a full-time closer in a very tough division and very tough league, and all of baseball really is has gotten so much better and so much tougher this year. There's only really several teams that you can say you're not really scared to pitch against at some point in the rotation. Again, that's not something that baseball has been able to say. It's been feast or famine for a lot of teams, and last year we saw, especially with that second wild card in both leagues, what you were able to see from so many of the ball clubs out there. So Ken Giles has a lot of work cut out for him to prove himself as a full-time closer, but does have the stuff there. But Steve, as you know from your experience, you got to show it on the field and you got to do it every day. But Ken Giles is one of those guys that I'm very high on, drafting him everywhere possible. And I like what they did by re-signing Rasmus, Tony Sipp, and then bringing in Ken Giles in the trade. They give up a lot for him, so they need him to work out. And adding Doug Fister as a free agent, I believe that's a one-year deal for them. So they ended up helping themselves by not making a lot of moves, which I like. What do you think about that, Steve? You think they should have done a little bit more, or you think what they did is just right?
I think what they did is just right. I think they have continuity in that clubhouse. You know, the chemistry is there. They added pieces that they felt would make their ball club better, and kept the pieces in place that they feel that are long-term fit. So I like this ball club, and I'm excited to watch them play.
Agreed. And that leaves us with one team left, and that's the LA Angels. A good ball club, a lot of veteran presence there. They made a lot of moves this offseason, Steve, and they had to make a good amount of moves just because they are somewhat of an aging team as well. With Albert Pujols, you have Jared Weaver, who was the anchor of that starting rotation for so long. Off a year last year, injury plagued, going to start the year hurt as well with a neck. It's going to be out at least until April 5th. Yeah, Garrett Richards come back in a pretty good way as well. Struggled a little bit walk-wise with the control, 15-12 last year, 207 innings, 76 walks, a little bit scary there. You hope he doesn't regress, but did have 176 Ks as well in a 3.65 ERA. So he was able to get guys out once he got them on. But he's got different guys behind him now this year. You have one of the best, probably the best shortstop in a game, fielding-wise, and Andrelton Simmons, who I still can't believe the Braves ended up trading away, but I understand why they traded him away. Simmons, again, being probably the best fielding shortstop in baseball. You have Yunel Escobar playing third base for them now. Had one of his best years last year, 314 batting average, 139 games, 75 runs scored for the Washington Nationals. You have Giovatella, who's going to end up being their everyday second baseman as it looks right now. You have Cliff Pennington, probably going to end up being the backup, both at short, third, and second base. Gives him good flexibility there. But then you have first base. You have C.J. Cron, who had 16 dingers last year. You have Albert Pujols, who had 40 home runs last year and is most in a long time. They have a .244 batting average. I'd like to get your thoughts on Albert Pujols, Steve, and what you could expect to see from him this year.
Yeah, you know, if his foot is healthy and, he's able to get consistent at-bats, I think he's going to help this ball club, big time. I think him hitting in the four hole, giving some protection to those guys in front of him, with as dangerous as he can be, like you said, 40 home runs, if he's that guy in the middle of the lineup, Trout's going to get better pitches to hit. Cole Calhoun, if he's hitting at the two hole, he's going to get better pitches to hit. Who knows where C.J. Cron is. If he gets hot, then Albert's going to get more pitches to hit because it's a very dangerous lineup. Seen him out here in spring training. and they swing the bat. They are a very aggressive ball club, and they really try to get after the pitcher. So, this team, health-wise, scares me a little bit, but if they stay healthy, they have put pieces in place to be very competitive and maybe give those other two teams, the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, a run for their money in the AL West.
So how about the Houston Astros we had talked about what their payroll is going to be for 2016, even though we already finished with the Astros, just want to get that number in there. It's going to be $89 million this year, so a big jump. I'm actually seeing different stats on SportTrack. It's saying that they had $81 million payroll last year. I got to do a little more research on that, but that's going to be $89 million payroll for this year. And then you have the LA Angels adding those players, you know, Escobar, Simmons, they're going to be a little bit higher year over year, and they're still paying Josh Hamilton's contract as well. So $162 million payroll for the LA Angels. So there's a lot of expectation there. There are big issues internally last year, Steve, front office as well. You imagine that to put a little bit of a strain on the team as well. But what do you think ends up being the ML for them? What do you think ends up being the theme for them? Is it more going to be more off the field or on the field? Because you do have Mike Socha there, who might be on the hot seat yet again.
No, I think the stuff on the field is going to be primarily what this team has looked at. They're expected to win. They're expected to do very well. They put together a ball club with some trades this offseason and the pieces that they had in place. Jared Weaver, obviously I'm definitely not sold on him. He's kind of hit a decline and he's definitely not their ace anymore. Garrett Richards is going to have to step into that role. Is he going to be able to handle the ace role pitching against other number ones? That's to be determined, and we'll see. And then, the guys behind him, Santiago and Shoemaker and Andrew Heaney, they're very serviceable. They're guys who I think will compete really well. And a good buddy of mine, Charles Nagy, is now their pitching coach. And I know he'll do very well with those guys and keep them motivated and keep them ready to pitch.
So, there's a lot of expectation here. They added some talent there. They also have Cole Calhoun, who broke out last year. Batting average still a bit weak, but it seems to be the story in all of baseball. High homers, low batting average. That's why a guy who's four or five tools is commands so much money, which is also surprising to me why a guy like Justin Upton, who has that kind of ability, was really lingering around the free agent wire for so long. All right, so then you have Mike Trout on there as well. Sorry, I saw something that took my mind off. But you have Mike Trout, 41 homers last year, another great campaign for him, 104 runs, 11 stolen bases. So back into that bullpen, anchored by Houston Street, 40 saves. I know somebody you know pretty well, Steve, Houston Street. He was there with you on the field for your last game, your last two innings pitched, and, of course, your time with the Oakland A's the second time around.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Houston Street, solid closer in the back end, very competitive guy, very under the radar closer, in my opinion. I think he's, done a tremendous job when he was over in San Diego, got traded over to Anaheim, and is picked up right where he left off. He's got a tremendous changeup, tremendous stuff, locates well, and is a really, nice anchor at the back end of their pen in the ninth inning. So, this team here is going to be able to put some runs up, and I have a feeling that, as you get to the back end of their bullpen with Joe Smith and then Houston Street, they're going to be able to close out a lot of games and win a lot of games when they get ahead. I mean, again, it's going to come down to starting pitching for them, being able to give them some innings and hand that ball over to the bullpen to bring them down the stretch. So, they added Albuquerque as well from Detroit last year. He's a very durable guy, dependable guy, and he's a guy who can pitch in the sixth and seventh inning. And I feel that's something that they need to be able to get the ball to Joe Smith and Houston Street, as I said.
Yeah, definitely a great 8-9 inning setup there. They also have Tyler Skaggs and C.J. Wilson who are hurt. So they really have about pretty much 8 starting pitchers there. So some of those guys are going to be in the bullpen. Some of those guys will be in the minor league. So it ends up being interesting what ends up shaking out there. Matt Shoemaker couldn't follow up on a great 2014. Really kind of a Cinderella story. Was 7-10 last year with a 4.46 ERA. So with that, that ends up wrapping up our AL West discussion. We're gonna look to see once we get closer to the start of the season, we're going to do our lineup or rundown of who we think ends up being the division champion and ends up being the playoff teams, obviously with the two wild cards for each division and who ends up going to the World Series from there. So we'll be releasing that as we get a little bit closer to the season. We got to see what ends up happening. Stuff like Will Smith's injury and some of the other injuries that are out there. Of course, the Brewers, we didn't expect to be a playoff team, but injuries like that happen to playoff teams as well. So with that, that wraps up our annual team-by-team, division-by-division analysis. Been incredible. Had some really cool guests on, and we will have Kenny Albert on either this coming week or this coming weekend to do a tribute to Joe Garagiola Sr., who passed away at the age of 90 several days ago. It's a very sad story. A legendary announcer, a legendary figure in the game of baseball. Steve, it's time for our last leg, so I'll yield the floor to you. I just want to let everybody know we're going to be doing a story on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, one of those stories I think that needs to be told. What a great man and ambassador for baseball. So my last leg, I'm going to move on to that. I'm going to go off the topic of baseball. It coincides a little bit with baseball and players. But I'm going to go to women's tennis and talk about Maria Sharapova and possibly getting suspended for a supplement that she's been taking for a while and didn't know that supplement was on the WTA's list for banned substances. It was probably something that she overlooked and she was taking for a while. But, it's a big hit for women's tennis, losing a Maria Sharapova in on the tour and the type of fans that she brings in. But I just want to talk about a little bit about being responsible no matter what sport you're in. And we talk a lot about it in baseball, about these guys getting caught for, different supplements that they put in their body that, you know, a lot of guys complain that they didn't know that they were supposed to do it. But I'm sure the WTA, I'm sure Major League Baseball, the NFL, puts memos out to these players about supplements that you're putting in your body. You've got to take responsibility for what you put in your body because they know that drug testing comes, and if there's anything that the drug test comes up with, they're going to get suspended for a long time. And in baseball, if you're suspended for 80 games and you're one of those players who is a key cog in your lineup or in the pitching staff, it really is a big hit to your ball club. Not many people know that if you lose one guy that's a mainstay in your lineup, that it really can affect the team. And this affects, since it's not a team sport, the WTA, it really affects the sport overall because she is example of, sportsmanship and what she brings and the type of fans she brings to the stadium. So, we wish her well, but she has to take responsibility for her actions. She said she should have known that this was banned and that probably should have been something that she shouldn't have taken. But the suspension seems to be, what the WTA is going to hand down. It could be a 2-year suspension that she's not going to be on tour. And, hopefully that won't end her career because we know how tennis short-lived that can be for some players if you're not on the circuit being competitive. But, my last relic was more about being responsible on any type of sport that you play, of what you put in your body, and not to overlook that it can be a component that will really affect you as a person or your team. So that is my last lick for tonight.
It's certainly a powerful last lick, and it's not just for professionals out there. Those listening and those who will be sharing what they hear on the show via social media or otherwise, it's important to it's not just, again, being a professional athlete or anything like that. It's about being responsible in all facets of life, doing things that, you know, sometimes we have a brain freeze and we do stupid things. That's one thing. But actually knowing and trying to get away with things is a whole different thing. So being responsible, always paramount in the game of life, not just the game of baseball or tennis or anything like that. So great last lick as always, Steve. My last lick, what was I going to say? I'm just kidding. So the start of baseball season's right around the corner. I've been playing a lot of baseball, a lot of basketball recently, and I got to thinking when I play basketball, just the amount of fun that I have when I play. I know I talk about this a lot. It's kind of a rehash of my last lick from not too long ago. But again, just want to talk about the game of baseball. And as we get into this and as we get into Pee Wee leagues and youth leagues and things like that, to remember certain things, that sports is one thing. Ultimately, I ended up watching the movie Concussion, and it sent shivers down my spine. And my segue is that we want kids to be able to do certain things and play, and then we have these adults that we watch and we cheer for, and we want them to hit harder and get bigger, get stronger, do different things. The game of baseball is great. People do get hurt. The game of football is great, and it's beautiful in its own way, but people get hurt, and they get hurt a lot. And the NFL has done a very poor job being transparent, because they know that the information that they have could be damning to the league. These guys are going through a lot of different things mentally, and it's, a lot of it is unseen. We hear about PTSD in the military, and that's not talked about enough as it should be. I've done many interviews in the past before doing this baseball show about it, but the game of football, very unsafe for players. We spoke about it with Greg Easterbrook, and you and I talked about it at length, Steve, of how dangerous the game actually is, of how we wouldn't allow our kids to play until a certain age if we allow them to play at all. You know, so just always be mindful of that. The game is great. The game is fun, but there's always that health aspect to it. And again, kind of piggybacking off what Steve says, to be responsible of it and not just say, you know, we want people to hit harder and do all that kind of stuff, that there is a person at the end wearing that helmet, running across the field or running across the court or whatever it might be, that these are humans at the end of the day. They're not dolls for our amusement and things like that. These are people with emotional issues, and a lot of times to perform, and also just the stuff that happens just naturally from the game itself. So what happened to Raimel Liriano getting hit in the face, Ref Snyder, the Yankees, getting hit in the face by a couple ground balls 2 days in a row, stuff like that does end up affecting players. Again, the game of football, and I encourage everybody to see the movie they can, or if they have the stomach for it, just because it gets you thinking about the dangers of the game. And that is my last lick, and that wraps up this week's show.
Great last lick. And you know, it's very important to know that you know, the best welfare of the player is always looked at by the coach. So great last lick. Just want to thank everybody for tuning in, listening, letting us you know, into your radios and into your computers a little bit, and doing the AL West, finishing up our team-by-team analysis. I hope you all enjoyed that, and we are just looking forward to a tremendous baseball season, which is going to start in about, 10 days or so, and looking for the matchups on opening day, which is always fun and exciting, and it's just it gets us primed for the season. So thanks for everybody for joining us. Really appreciate it. And we will definitely talk to you next week.
Yep. And just a couple more notes. We promised that we would give an update on Villanova Kansas game. Second half, a little over 5 minutes left. Villanova's still up by two. It's 52-50. And we will be having Kenny Albert, a legendary announcer. He's going to be doing our tribute to Joe Garagiola Jr., who again passed away at the age of 90 a couple days ago. So we'll be doing that tribute for him. He might end up giving us an audio that he wanted us to do, just in case scheduling conflicts occur, because he's doing so many different things, and Steve's schedule is crazy too. But stay tuned to carsaintthekid.com for more details there. Till then, we hope everybody has a safe and happy Easter, whether you celebrate or not. Hopefully you enjoy the rest of your weekend if you don't celebrate Easter. But enjoy, be with family, no matter what it is, no matter what you celebrate, and be safe out there. Be responsible.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
Thanks. Bye.